Hello and welcome to Euractiv's Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Natasha Foote.
And I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food News team. So our first podcast of 2021.
Yeah, our first podcast. So we are back. Definitely back.
Yep, back. Back bigger and better. Better than ever. Ready and raring for what this year is going to throw at us. Whatever that might be.
No, I mean, we also want to wish our listeners a luckier new year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. And we made it through 2020, and already 2021 is shaping up to be a pretty interesting year, even though we're only 2 weeks in. Feels longer, no?
Indeed. That's why we want to kick off this new year podcast, talking a bit more about what to expect from 2021 when it comes to the EU agri-food policy, you know? For instance, I start, and my guess is that we're going to have a reform of the Common Agricultural Policy.
Ooh.
Signed, sealed, delivered, yeah. I put it out there. Yeah. Easy and simple. So why I'm telling this? Last week we published this exclusive interview with the Portuguese Agriculture Minister, Maria do Céu Antunes, and she will chair the Agrifish Council until the end of June. So she said that in the next 6 months, the Portuguese presidency will be committed to the conclusion of the CAP negotiations that were started by the German presidency. So we're talking about the EU's farming subsidies program here. As you probably know, we are at the last stage of the legislative process, the so-called trilogue phase, where the two co-legislators, so the European Parliament and the European Council, they are basically negotiating in order to agree on a common text of the final pieces of legislation that made up the whole CAP, the whole Common Agricultural Policy. So Portuguese aim at reaching an agreement with the Parliament by April. Is it feasible? Let's say it is ambitious. Talks are going on really slowly. The pending issue is basically the green architecture of the Common Agricultural Policy. So once settled this aspect, it'll probably be downhill. On Monday, there was an update made by the Parliament negotiators at the European Parliament's Agriculture Committee. And the negotiator basically say that positions on this eco-scheme, so basically the eco-schemes are the core aspect of the architecture, you know, the positions are very far apart. You can also check out on our website the interview that we had with one of the Parliament's negotiator, the French socialist Eric Andrieu, who was advocating for this concept of rebuilding food sovereignty in the context of the, of the CAP reform. He's, by the way, the Parliament rapporteur on a very important portion of the farming subsidies program, which is the Common Organization of Agricultural Markets, which basically rule the production and, you know, trading of agricultural products in the European Union, including, for instance, food of both animal and plant origin. So if negotiators will not manage to strike a deal under the Portuguese presidency, I mean, the other presidency of 2021, the Slovenian one, will have the last war. We know how this kind of negotiation can last for a long time, but they can't last for ages. So also considering that the current transitional period for CAP will last until the end of 2022, and the member states are supposed to file their national strategic plans already this year, so I think it's highly likely that 2020 will be the year for a final deal.
The actual final cap down now.
The actual final count, yeah.
We can bring back that hashtag as well.
And we will.
When it happens. It's pretty exciting.
It's a problem.
I'm sure. And of course, the other something that I think we might hear a little bit more about is, of course, Brexit, this recurring issue.
What is this Brexit thing you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah, I've never heard of it either. Shall I explain? Kidding. Yeah, well, so we obviously over Christmas had a last minute, really 11th hour agreement between the UK and the EU, which provisionally entered into force on the 1st of January this year. And this was really, you know, a massive achievement for the two negotiating teams. You know, there was in the run-up a lot of concern from the agri-food sector around this no deal possibility. And you know, all the major agri-food stakeholders on both sides of the channel were saying about how disastrous this would be. So it's no doubt a significant improvement on the no-deal Brexit that threatened in the weeks leading up to the deal. So the deal, it is a little bit rough and ready. It's early days. It's actually only provisional for the moment, but it provides this kind of foundation to develop a longer-term relationship between the two parties, and in many ways, it ticks a lot of boxes. You know, I think for both negotiating sides, that their kind of red lines weren't crossed. It fulfills a lot of the issues closest to their hearts. But there have been a number of teething problems, shall we say, and it remains to be seen kind of how temporary these are. And there's also a number of issues that remain to be kind of hashed out. So yeah, like I said, even though we struck this deal, kind of like the first battle is won, but the war's not over. There's still plenty of disruption, and you know that ranges from issues of confiscating animal products. We had all kinds of reports of people losing their sandwiches and everything else. And obviously, personally, I'm very sad about my loss of ability to bring cheddar over in enormous quantities.
Yeah, that's anyway. the main issue of the entire Brexit.
Honestly, we need to sort that out because I'm not sure what I'm going to do. But anyway.
It's funny because actually we're talking about food products, not even this, you mentioned the sandwich scandal. But I mean, with this harsh reaction from the Dutch officer, and again, it was about food, no? So, of course, Brexit, it's also other stuff, but maybe the most visible aspects are food related. Mm. No, there's also this, you know, the seafood issue at the exporters of seafood products that have this this issue, you know, due to the lengthy new bureaucratic requirements to export their product. We're talking about perishable food.
Definitely.
No, I saw on our website this wire on Scottish fishermen that want to dump the, you know, all this seafood in front of the parliament, so as a way to protest.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that. I mean, food is obviously kind of the most it's an issue that touches everyone kind of personally, and I think you feel it, you know, very strongly when there's an issue with food. And definitely it's central to many of the Brexit kind of issues that are still there to be negotiated and to be dealt with. And also more serious, well, it's all quite serious, but pretty...
Cheddar is serious.
Cheddar is definitely, I think cheddar is very serious, but even more serious than cheddar, and now you know it's serious. Today there were reports that, you know, there were supermarket shelves that were empty in Northern Ireland. And you know, basically the Northern Ireland agricultural minister was worrying that there was really a looming crisis here, and even the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson even said that he would be willing to break the deal to sort out a solution in Northern Ireland. And you know, we're only 2 weeks into the year, so that throws up all kinds of other issues. And speaking about issues in Northern Ireland and in Ireland, obviously Ireland is one of the member states, you know, that's the closest to Brexit geographically, but also has the most issues and a lot at stake here, really. And so with that in mind, we spoke with Paul Kelly, who is the director of Food Drink Ireland, to hear a little bit more about what the first 2 weeks of this year has had in store for them and what he sees for the future are the main concerns. So I suppose it's safe to say that we've been off to somewhat of a bumpy start at the beginning of 2021. I wondered if you could kind of talk us through a little bit these past couple of weeks, which has felt a bit more like a lifetime, I think, for some. Could you give us a little bit of an overview about what the current situation is and what your biggest concerns right now are?
Well, I suppose the timeline is we had the agreement on the 24th of December, which was literally 7 days before the end of the implementation period and the start of the brave new world, if you want to call it that, on the 1st of January. A few days later, then we got to see the trade agreement itself. And again, that needed to be digested particularly quickly. So certainly, if we look at it, I suppose, from two or three perspectives, number one, in terms of actually the movement of goods and so on, a lot of companies obviously were stockpiling in advance. So even now, a good few days in, essentially 2 weeks into the new year, we still haven't seen the normal trade volumes return to normal levels, which is probably a good thing in a sense, because there have been quite a number of teething problems, which has impacted on trade, caused a lot of delays and so on. Hopefully a lot of that is teething problems, but I think it is worth bearing in mind that with the UK having left both the single market and the customs union, they are a third country. And there's a huge amount of what essentially is now permanent additional administrative measures and checks and so on, which are in place. So I think everybody in the supply chain needs to be fully aware of that, that even once we get through these teething problems, all that's going to stay in place. And moreover, come 1st of April, when the second phase of the UK's border operating model comes into play, particularly for products of animal origin from the continent and from Ireland being exported into Great Britain, we're going to see a lot of additional administration, particularly on the SPS side, start to kick in as well. So there are some of, I think, the immediate trade impacts that are being faced.
And talking about kind of teething issues, today there's been a lot of concern about empty shelves in Northern Ireland. And the Agricultural Minister, Edwin Poots, he was warning of a looming crisis, whereas the Prime Minister dismissed these as teething issues. I'm wondering, from your perspective, from your side of things, what your view on this is. Is this an over-exaggeration, or is this something a bit more concerning?
I think it's a reality, but we're obviously looking at it from a little further south on the island. The difference probably is, and again, I think this goes back to, you know, implementation and the ability of supply chains and businesses to react very, very quickly and sometimes in unfeasibly short periods of time. So I know there between the UK and the EU, there are a number of easements, temporary easements, which are in place for the first number of months. But nevertheless, you know, for all the teething problems that we have, say, for example, for product traveling from GB to Ireland, and certainly there are delays and teething problems, you know, for a number of years, it's been known quite clearly that the UK is going to be outside the single market, is going to be outside the customs union. So therefore, all the third country measures take effect. I think with the Northern Ireland Protocol and essentially the final agreement that was reached by the EU and the UK in relation to the implementation of that, essentially late enough in the year, separate obviously to the overall agreement, but nevertheless late in the year, I think sort of the preparation times that were available to businesses who would be trading between GB and Northern Ireland were shortened, and perhaps there wasn't a full awareness of sort of the extent and rigor of the checks that were going to be involved. So yeah, we can see why there are shortages on the shelves up there, but really I think, you know, the rules are the rules, but a period of, I think, appropriate implementation time needs to be considered to allow businesses to adopt to the new, or adapt, should I say, to the new normal.
So you said, Paul, that it is actually a matter of big concern. But in addition to that, the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson also said that he won't hesitate to break the deal already to get Northern Ireland restocked. So how much of a concern is that other threat to the food drink industry in Ireland?
Well, I think what's hugely important to us is that both the integrity of the single market is maintained, and both the letter and the spirit of the Northern Ireland Protocol is maintained as well. And the two go hand in hand, particularly for us on the island here, because they are sort of key to ensuring that there is no border on the island of Ireland.
And lastly, we turn to fresh news that Ireland is set to receive 1 billion euro or 25% of the EU Brexit Reserve Fund in 2021. And we've seen that your organization welcomed this, but at the same time, it called for targeted support measures in the sector. Could you please expand on what you want to see and what are the most needed for companies right now?
Well, firstly, I mean, I think we welcomed the original announcement of the 5 billion fund in the council conclusions back in July of last year. And I think the announcement over the last day or two that Ireland is going to receive 1 billion or approximately 25% of the first 4 billion that would be distributed again is welcome. From our perspective, the food sector in Ireland is the most exposed sector in the most exposed country. And even with a deal in place, and certainly we're delighted that there are no tariffs, aside from a number of the rules of origin issues, which obviously have arisen in recent days. But nevertheless, as we've just discussed, we face a lot of additional paperwork, customs and SPS formalities, transport delays, disruption to delivery schedules, and so on. So that's imposing a lot of cost on the system, and businesses are going to need to be able to modify their business practices and in some instances diversify the markets that they operate in. So again, we welcome the money, but we need to make sure that it's spent in a proper fashion. And from our perspective, we need to see it invested in competitiveness, in improving the export capability and innovation capability of companies. And other key issues would be custom skills. As I mentioned earlier, this is a permanent situation now, so a lot more customs capability is going to be required in the industry. And finally, the rest of the EU, EU26, is accessed by Ireland, which is an island off continental Europe, in two ways, either the land bridge across Wales and England, or else directly by ferry routes to the continent. There's always been direct ferry routes to the continent, but the capacity has been relatively limited in terms of freight. So there has been a significant increase over the last few weeks, but our view would be that we're going to need an even greater increase. So certainly we would like to see the funding support increased connectivity to the continent for us, and in turn for European exporters, so that they've got good access to the Irish market as well.
So yeah, I think a bumpy start is the way to put things. I guess, though, one of the most important things when it comes to agri-food products is that the deal prevented the introduction of tariffs for UK-EU trade, although there was some caveats to that, some issues that we've already run against to do with rules of origin. So to qualify for having zero tariffs, products you have to be able to prove where they come from, that they come from a country that qualifies for that. And there's been all kinds of issues from UK distribution centres that were importing products from the EU and then sorting it out and then re-exporting it back to the EU. And you know, these are issues that still need to be worked out. And of course, even if trade is in principle free of tariffs, it does come with additional costs, you know, custom procedures, paperwork. So it's costly in other ways, shall we say. And then there are a number of issues that we're going to have to deal with. You know, they're going to come up this year and we're going to be dealing with them throughout this year. So in the Agri Committee meeting that was this week that focused on the issue of Brexit, they raised a few interesting points. There were a lot of questions, for example, surrounding GI, so geographical indications, because the UK did not agree to the protection of geographical indications the EU could register in the future. So a lot of questions about what the arrangements will be there and how that will work. And going forward, there's kind of some obvious trouble on the horizon to do with compliance and level playing fields. So one of their first Brexit moves was to launch a consultation on gene editing, which is a pretty telling move. You know, it shows their kind of priorities for the agri-food sector. And, you know, they gave a lot of indications that they were looking to open up England and then potentially in the future the UK to gene editing and new plant breeding techniques. And of course, that introduces some problems for trade with the EU. And similarly, the UK also moved to allow some neonicotinoid pesticides, these controversial pesticides that are linked to bee decline, and they're banned in the EU. But this week, the UK move to at least temporarily allow them. And so there's a lot of questions around kind of cooperation on phytosanitary measures and how we can trade when we don't have the same level playing field. And lastly, another issue that was raised in the Agri Committee meeting was the issue of who gets to settle disputes, what action can be taken, if the other side isn't complying. And it's already, it's pretty interesting already 2 weeks down the line, as we spoke about earlier with Northern Ireland, it's potentially already becoming an issue. So maybe we'll get an answer to that question sooner than we think. And in terms of looking ahead, what's next for the Brexit deal? So it has been adopted by the UK Parliament, but it's yet to be approved by the European Parliament and also needs unanimous approval in the EU Council. So both of these steps are expected to happen by the end of February, although obviously this, could move depending on what's going on. But we can expect that to come up soon in the coming months.
Yeah, we hope soon. Before moving on the next thing that we were looking at in 2021, I just want to recall to our listeners that according to the Oxford English Dictionary, the word Brexit was first used on a blog post appeared on Euractiv.
Of course, so, trendsetters.
Yeah, indeed. Just in case you don't know, I mean, that's the real story behind this term.
That's quite a claim to fame, actually. Yeah, impressive.
No, indeed. I mean, it's one of the first things that I say to, when I introduce myself, I work at Euractiv. Yeah, you know that we call it. Not joking.
He's not joking.
Other things on our radar, and actually on the radar of lawmakers, stakeholders, and who's working in the EU bubble. So it was also announced for the fourth quarter of 2021, a quite important revision of the framework for geographical indications, which basically will involve all agricultural sectors, but the wines and spirit drinks are excluded because they will maintain their current specificities. So GIs are, geographical indications are designed to protect the names of specific products in order to promote their unique characteristics linked to their geographical origin, as well as to the know-how, for instance, embedded in the region. So it is thanks to GIs that, for instance, you can make champagne only if you use grapes grown in the homonymous French region. And the same thing with the meat produced in the hills around Parma can legitimately bear the name of Prosciutto di Parma, just for making another example. So there's this commission's new attempt to strengthen and modernize and also better enforce GIs for agri-food products, which is part of a broader intellectual property action plan, which is also supposed to support the EU's recovery and resilience after the pandemic. But in general, the revision of the GI policy is expected also to boost its potential to contribute to the EU's new food policy, the Farm-to-Fork strategy. So it's a measure, this reform included in the Green Deal action plan set by the Commission. And we also going to have a look at the revision of two other EU broader policy areas that also have agreed impacts on agriculture, which are the state aid and trade policy. So for the state aid framework, the current rules will be applicable until the end of 2021. And there's an ongoing evaluation of the current rules that says that there is scope for procedural simplification. And at the same time, it also be important to this new framework will continue to be closely linked to the Common Agricultural Policy General Framework, because most of the state aid are allowed within this framework. So, for instance, during market crisis, we're talking about state aid coming from, again, governments that want to rescue certain sectors. It happens like 2 years ago with the Italian government made up this rescue plan for sheep milk producers. They were facing a crisis in price of their products. And at the same time, for the trade policy, there's this revision of the general EU trade policy going on, and you know, this revision will have to take into account new commitment to sustainable food systems. For instance, the EU is expected to propose legislation this year to prevent the import of commodities linked to deforestation, commodities including agricultural commodities. And it is basically to avoid this phenomenon of exporting unsustainable practices abroad. And at the same time, as a way to avoid that farmers might be kind of disadvantaged by the new environmental ambition of the farm-to-fork strategy.
And also, there are a couple of other things coming up that are definitely worthy of a mention. And one of those is the European Commission is going to release a study on new genomic techniques. And so this study basically comes in light of the European Court of Justice's ruling on new genomic techniques or plant breeding techniques. That basically said that they should in principle fall under the GMO directive. And so this is going to take another look at this. And basically, this is quite interesting as well. I mentioned earlier that the England and potentially opening up to the UK are starting their consultation on gene editing as well. So it will be interesting to see these kind of things going on in parallel and what happens and what are the conclusions of both. So the commission study on this is expected around April. And then we also have the long-awaited organic action plan that is due to come up. So I'm not sure exactly, I don't have a timeline for when this is supposed to be. It's been postponed a number of times. But there's the action plan on organic production that is due at some point this year. And we know that organic, I mean, obviously it's a central issue to do with the farm to fork strategy that talks about a goal and a target to triple the amount of land that is under organic production, and also is a key priority of the Portuguese presidency. So,
And also there will be a new framework for the marketing of organic food products, mm-hmm. which was supposed to start this year, but it was postponed after the push of the organic companies. They say that basically the sector wouldn't be ready to start with the new rules. So the new rules have been postponed to the beginning of 2022. And as you said, I mean, the Portuguese presidency, you know, and it's one of the core priorities. And at the same time, this week, the European Commission unveiled the list of potential eco-scheme. And of course, organic farming is quite at the core of this. We're talking about the sustainable practices that could be eligible for granting subsidies under the new reformed CAP. And again, there's an entire section on organic farming, as well as on integrated pest management. So we can say that 2021 could be the year for organic, let's say. And that's all from us. This week, the AgriFood podcast was produced by Euractiv's AgriFood team, Gerardo Fortuna and Natasha Food, with the technical support of Evi Chiori.
And this podcast is also available on all major podcast streaming platforms. That includes Apple, Amazon, Spotify, and Stitcher. I'm Natasha Foote. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next week.